the show.
Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to be here with you. We are smack dab in the middle of summer. I'm excited about that. Hey, Martha.
Hey, Lisa.
So this was actually Martha's idea. We're going to do a roundtable today on talking about the outdoors and spending time in the outdoors.
Excellent.
Specifically, probably leaning towards summer, although a couple of our guests, I'm sure, are just out 24/7, 365 days a year. Some of us have a little more discretion with that. But no, very excited to be part of this discussion, and it's going to be fun. We're going to have a fun time today. We're not going to do, unless the Lord leads, no altar calls at the end of this roundtable. We'll see. You never know when it may turn up. But we have Martha at the table.
You know, it is very ironic that I thought of this topic.
Well, that was kind of my point in mentioning you.
Yes.
So you will have much to share, and we're waiting to hear you weigh in on all of your... Well, you know what it's going to do. It's going to inspire you to get outside.
I'm not making any promises, but...
Tonight, night hike. You're going to meet up with me at midnight. We're going to do a night hike. It's good. We also have Nathan Hubler here. Nathan, welcome.
Thank you.
We know him as the Adventures in Odyssey expert, but he is also an expert in all things outdoor activities. So we had to bring him back.
An expert at enjoying, anyway.
Yes. Specifically, forte of a couple activities. Basically, his Facebook profile looks like an REI catalog. So
that's what people have told
it's
me.
It's one of those, what in the world does he do besides climb mountains and sheets of ice and who knows what else? And half of his photos, he's like covered with some kind of, you know, protective clothing or whatever. So good times with Nathan. We also have Josh Vriesema with us. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you.
Very glad to have you. He, too, is an outdoor enthusiast and very giving of his time, actually, because I understand that you led a group of our interns recently on a hike, a cross peak trek here in the Colorado Mountains.
I did.
But you do more than that. You're out and about. I always hear about you doing camping trips and through the grapevine.
Yes, camping, backpacking, everything. And in fact, search and rescue as well. Was out last night doing that. So,
Oh, my.
Who did you rescue?
Why?
Well, I can't really tell you that.
Martha's ears just perked up because she's sensing, you know, her first outdoor adventure.
Her first outdoor adventure. I'm glad there's people like you to help people like me.
So when she fords her first river, you know, Josh will be there. And Cassie Anderson, welcome.
Yeah.
She is one of our interns that just was on the aforementioned Cross Peak trek. And so she's kind of here to share her experience. But you are from Wisconsin.
Yep. And I go to school in Minnesota. So.
Okay. And now you have a Colorado experience this summer. So you're just getting kind of the full gamut of everything.
Yeah.
So, well, very cool. So we just want to talk a little bit here. We have kind of an outdoor theme reflected here at Boundless this week. You'll see it in our articles and then certainly in this show. So we wanted to take time to celebrate that. Many people think that it's something just unique to Colorado, but it's not. Although it seems that Coloradoans are kind of obligated to at least acknowledge the fact, given that we have, what, over 300 days of sun. Do you guys know the actual stat?
I've heard different stats, but it's definitely a good place to be if you like the outdoors.
Yeah, outdoors.
Do you know
the
stats?
It just depends on how you measure what a day of sun is, but pretty much every day at least starts sunny here.
Mm-hmm.
And except for the past week, rain doesn't happen too much. So, yeah.
A little cloudier. Well, anyone who is listening to this, whether you are in the middle of your winter right now or your summer, or if you're in a, you know, even if you're in a smoggy city, hey, that'll be one of our articles, right? You're going to learn about how you can even enjoy the outdoors in the city and appreciate that. Can have some understanding and enjoyment of God's creation. And so let's go ahead and talk about that. I like spending time outdoors. I love the summer. I love June 21st. It's the longest day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned this recently on Boundless or on our Facebook page that I make it a habit of getting up before sunrise on June 21st and going to bed after sundown so that I can say I experience the full day.
Every hour of sunlight.
on the longest day of the year.
Do you take the day off from work too?
I don't, no. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should though. But I kind of sit near a window now so I can kind of look out, you know, so it's good. But so we've talked a lot about activities and the fact that, you know, some people observe the outdoors from their windows. Some people you know, look at pictures. Some people get out and are in the outdoors all the time. I mean, how do you all feel your perspective on the outdoors is, whether it's where you are right now or different places that you've lived or, you know, grown up or whatever? You know, what are just some memories that trigger or just some specific experiences when you think of that, of creation?
Usually when I think back, I'll think of specific people that are on trips, you know, the different experiences that the people had with you on the trips, rather than, I mean, some trips you'll think of the adventures that you had, but a lot of times you'll think about the things you did with the people on that trip. And mm-hmm. so the group on the trip can make it really memorable mm-hmm. in one way or another.
Yeah. Now, you, Nathan, have lived in Colorado for a while, a little...
11 years.
Okay, 11 years. What prompted your, have you always been an outdoors kind of guy, or was it really showing up in Colorado and being like, oh my goodness, I love these mountains and I want to climb them?
My family was outdoorsy growing up. My dad was really into hunting, fishing, camping. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's something I've always grown up with. And then living in Colorado is just it's so easy to get out. A lot of people have to drive a long way and, mm-hmm. And that's fine, but it sure is nice to be able to just, after work, you know, go on a hike or a climb and, mm-hmm. and without expending too much effort to try and get there.
Yeah. And by, I mean, for people who don't understand that, literally like 10 minutes. I mean, you can mm-hmm. go down within the city limits of Colorado Springs to a place called Red Rock Canyon. You can hike there. You can go into Cheyenne Canyon, which is just southwest here, part of town. And it really doesn't feel like you're living in a city. Mm-hmm. It's weird. So. Yeah.
Well, and it's easy here, too, because year-round you can get out. I mean, we pretty much never break 100 degrees, so it's never too hot to get out. And, well, living here, we get pretty used to the cold and we own the right gear. And so, you know, any day of the year we can get out. I know Nathan and I are year-round. You're more of a summer sort of person. But, yeah, even all summer long, mm-hmm. it's just that much easier to get out.
Yeah.
And even during the winter, then, you've still got nice days that you can go out. And
right.
Oh, absolutely.
And I do hike in the winter, actually. I'll hike in the snow. I don't do ice climbing or anything crazy like that, but I do hike. And I also run in the winter, which is funny because when I started signing up for a couple races this spring, they were advertising it by like, you know, okay, break in your running shoes and this will kind of get you started into running season. And I'm like, I just run all year because if mm-hmm. I don't, you know, then I will have gained 30 pounds. So it's just like something I do. And I run in the morning in the dark with a headlamp and pepper spray. And you just do it. And so it's kind of one of those things where, oh, okay, make it happen. You know, what you talked a little bit, Josh, about your activities of choice, but what kind of got you into those? Has it been a lifelong thing or?
Yeah, it's been a lifelong thing for me. I grew up in Colorado and I grew up on a 110-acre ranch that bordered, I think, 8,000 or 9,000 acres in national forest, but lived in a house that was built in the 1800s, and I think it was like 900 square feet, so with three boys, mom pretty much just forced us out every day, you know, it's kind of survival, just uh-huh. any day that was nice enough, kick us out, and that's just what we grew up in, so grew up hiking and doing all that, and yeah, it was not a learn or not something I picked up later in life. It's just what we did.
Wow. That was almost like a little pioneer experience for you.
Well, yeah, we were. My parents actually moved out here from Wisconsin. I was actually born in Colorado, but spent a couple of years in Wisconsin. Their move out there. Yeah, we was.
Okay. Did they like blow up deer bladders and make you bat them around and stuff?
Like, no, okay. We weren't quite that
you
pioneer,
had real
but
sports equipment. That's good.
We did have a little bit of a rough first year, and I do remember a neighbor coming by with about half an elk and dropping it on the kitchen table, and
whoa.
Mom freaking out that's what he meant when he said he could bring over some meat for us.
Uh-huh.
So,
okay,
but yeah, it's I don't know, sounds more mountaineering or mountainy than it really was, but okay, yeah, I just grew up out there.
Okay. Cassie, how about you? What do you like doing outside?
Well, just grew up in the middle of nowhere, so I don't know. It takes like an hour to get to the mall. So being outside is just what we do back home, and my dad loved fishing and camping, and so spent a lot of time with him. I don't know. He didn't think I was the greatest fisher. I talked way too much, but still love fishing if it involves socializing. Love soccer. Grew up playing soccer, and I'm allergic to grass, so everybody just laughs at me because I'm like, oh, I just would be outside every day if it was allowed. Last summer, I was like, Mom, I'm just going to live in a tent for the whole summer. And she's just like, okay, good luck. But yeah, so love being outside, love hiking, spent a summer in Montana and did some backpacking a couple years ago. So I don't know, just love being outside, I think.
Okay. Now, Martha, you're admittedly more of an inside girl.
This is true.
How did this happen? Is everyone, like, do you have some people in your family that are outdoors people and some that are indoors, or?
No, I don't think there's really too many outdoorsy people. Like, I grew up in Minnesota where there's mosquitoes and humidity and lots of snow. Mm-hmm. So there's just not a very comfortable place to be. But I'm not, like, inside all the time. I mean, to go to a zoo and walk around, fun, Garden of the Gods here, good. But the risk of Pike's Peak or whatever, Fort Teeters and stuff that you guys do, that's out of my element. Mm-hmm. That doesn't even interest me.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to get your arm trapped in a rock
exactly,
or something.
Exactly, that I have to cut it off myself.
Because that would totally happen if you went out there. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. But you do outdoor stuff. And I mean, we're talking about outdoors. It, you know, it could be eating outside or it could be...
I do enjoy that. Yeah. If I have my sunscreen.
She reads outside.
If you have your sunscreen or a patio umbrella.
That works too.
That totally works. Okay, well, I was just trying to figure out, you know, what some of the motivations were, like, if it was just, because that's me with, like, professional team sports. My dad and my brother were, like, kind of into them, but I'm the youngest of everyone in my family, so I was kind of the caboose, and so I never really, it wasn't one of those things where I was part of the family, my dad and brother rooting for sports. So as a result, I don't know anything about team sports, professional sports, other than what I learned from People Magazine. And I don't follow teams, I don't follow the sport, so... I'm with you. I understand that. It's just kind of...
Still accept me. It's good.
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, I'm just teasing. So, Cassie, you have to tell us a little bit about your experience now coming in. You did sign up for this activity that the interns were going to do, and maybe, you know, without a full body of information behind you as to what that was going to be. But tell us how that went down.
Yeah, remember hiking out in Montana, and I just remember it was miserable. All uphill is just all up, like the mountain is just terrible, and your lungs just burn. And I decided I like stopping more than I liked hiking. You get to eat.
That's my girl.
Yeah. Trail mix. I mean, you get to eat whatever you want, and then and it's okay.
And as much as you want.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, the stopping part is great, but the view is just worth it. So your lungs just killing you the whole way up, and your calves burning is okay when you get up to the top and you just get to see the view. And downhill isn't as bad if there's not a ton of rocks. And but yeah, so it was a really fun experience. I loved it, and I love going downhill is more fun because you get to talk with people and you can actually breathe. So you just get to hear a lot of different people's stories. And best part was we just got to, like, go slide down the snow at the end. And that was great. And it was so much better than walking down it anyways. Oh, so much better.
Because this was where, when, what date was this? I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize that you can hike in Colorado and be in snow.
Yeah, this was mid-June, okay. And we've had an exceptionally high snow year this year. Mm-hmm. I actually had no intention of delivering the adventure that I delivered to them on this trip. yeah, last year, mid-June, that trail was completely clear. This year, I think not even a half mile of the trip was actually on a trail. Just too much snow to follow the trail. So, yeah, the it turned out to be more of an adventure.
It was more fun too.
The glissading, which is the term for sliding, sliding on your, just sitting down on the snow and sliding down the hill. what took us about 6 hours to go up, took us a little over an hour to get down. So yeah, very nice to come back down that way. Yeah.
What mountain was that again?
It was Mount Democrat.
Nice. Okay. From Kite Lake then.
Yes. Nice. And, technically, usually one of the easiest 14ers in Colorado, but this year it's not proving to be that way. So, when I had to cut steps into the snow so that they could have traction to get up a hill, that was a little bit adventurous for them.
I'm glad you're saying this, and now I can have my friends listen to this podcast and be like, see, it was hard. Somebody said it. It's not just me. So,
you know, that's actually just what you guys are talking about is one of my favorite things about going into the outdoors and taking people into the outdoors is that you just bond much more quickly and get to know people much more quickly because you're in kind of a more extreme situation than just having dinner or going to a movie or something. That, you know, you really get to see kind of the real person much more quickly, I think, than you would in just a normal urban kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took out a whole group of college age girls who didn't wind up being, no one was concerned about their looks on that trip. They were all wearing borrowed gear from whoever they could borrow some gear from, and it certainly was no fashion show, but they made it to the top, and that was all that mattered, and we had a good time doing it.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I was hiking over Memorial Day weekend out on the Western Slope, and I remember putting on Facebook afterwards, like, is there anywhere that you can hike in Colorado that's not uphill? It's basically every day we were just like, here we go, uphill again. And but like Cassie said, it is nice to have those downhills where then you can kind of have a long stretch of just talking to people and feeling like, okay, you know, this is manageable. But yeah, you kind of have to pull it out between then. But okay, so now how can we, my question here with enjoying the outdoors, because there are some very real things, like as I think of it, because I've done hikes, there are certain things in the state and elsewhere that I've seen that, you know, a lot of people, it does give you access to certain things. Like, you know, I love waterfalls, and many waterfalls you have to, there are, you know, a few that you can drive to and get out and, you know, see them and stuff. But many of them involve a hike, you know, to get to or whatever. So I really enjoy that. But now let's talk extremes here, because Nathan, I probably will never do an expedition with you because I am not into doing something that involves ropes and carabiners.
Well, they don't all have to be that extreme, but I know.
Okay, most of what you do, though, is you know, or a lot of your stuff is that. So how, I mean, does it kind of make you gravitate towards people that have those same types of interests, or how do you balance your other friends and people in your life that aren't into that?
Sometimes. I mean, I think it's one of the fun parts of it too, is introducing people to that who haven't done that kind of thing before, and, you know, finding a hike or some kind of adventure that they would enjoy that won't be, you know, extreme and scary and no fun at all, because you want people when they're going on one of their first hikes to enjoy it and not say, I'm never doing this again, because then you won't have friends to go with next time. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think that I probably tend toward people who enjoy the same kind of things, like all friendships.
Mm-hmm. You can always start by saying, well, we can start in my living room. That's from the guy who has a climbing wall in his living room. Let me That's just true. Put that out there.
Yes.
Good
to Martha's going to start with that. So it's like, yep, Martha's going to start with the climbing wall. So how about you, Josh?
Well, I find too, kind of the way you get into mountaineering in Colorado is you find people who know what they're doing and you follow and you learn from them.
Yeah.
And then what you wind up doing is you wind up kind of creating your own friends who do that sort of thing. So you start talking people into, you know, you take a group and, hey, come try this. And, you know, it doesn't take too much to get them addicted to it. It's a lot of fun to be out there. And, you know, especially if they've got someone to go with who knows what they're doing, then they really enjoy doing it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, same way I got into it, I'm just helping other people get into it too. That's, you know, like Nathan said, we don't always just do these major adventures that are, you know, like you said, ropes and carabiners and all that. We like to do some of the stuff that's not quite as crazy and do it with other people, because it's not as much fun if you're doing it by yourself.
Yeah,
it's much
more fun with a group.
Well, now, and you have a family. Are they into this as well? I mean, have you kind of talked to them, or did you just say, well, I got to do my own thing? Or
no, they're into it. My children are great climbers already. In fact, I have a four-year-old son who I'm afraid is going to be out climbing me pretty soon.
Oh,
that kid can climb up anything. It's kind of actually, he gets in trouble now because he keeps climbing up too much stuff.
Okay.
You got to be roped up there, buddy. But
that's the age I wish I started on a lot of these things, because, you know, if you start that age climbing or skiing or whatever, then you just, it's like walking, because you're just used to it from an early age. So
yeah.
So start your kids young at those kind of things.
Okay, so for the people that are sitting there saying, well, I don't live in Colorado, or I'm not in Montana, or I'm not by the beach or whatever, what are some things just historically from your own experience? I mean, from Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I lived in Washington, D.C. for a while. What are some just general suggestions that you all would have? Now, you guys can give some good perspective from, like, okay, you need to throw down some stuff because you're saying, oh, yeah, you know, beginners can do blah, blah, blah. So you need to give us some examples of that. What's a great way to get started in appreciation of the outdoors? And then the rest of us, let's just throw out suggestions for ways that you appreciate the outdoors, summer or winter, that you think would be good things for people to try.
I know Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes, almost every town has a lake in it. Mm-hmm. And where I grew up in Sleepy Eye, they actually have a path that goes around the lake, and it even goes through a cornfield. And So it's just something kind of fun to be able to do that's easy. And it's actually even paved, so you could take a bike out there or a stroller or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so That's right up my alley.
I love how they do in Minnesota, they do boat parades, like for different, you know, whether for 4th of July or whatever. And you can go out and watch all the boats. They get decked out and do parades. That's kind of fun. I like it.
That's one thing I miss for the summer because I haven't gone swimming once. And I feel like if you don't know how to swim in Minnesota or Wisconsin, like, I don't know what you're doing there. There's a lake everywhere you go. And so there's a possibility that you could be in that lake sometime. So I just like grew up canoeing a lot. And my friends and I just love to like, we're all about competition. So like we'll get together on the lake someday and we'll just be like, okay, we're going to canoe. Like the first canoe across the lake win, or back and forth like wins, or like swim across the lake. Like who can beat each other? And lots of water activities.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty fun.
You know, I think that almost anywhere that you live, I'm sure there are places that there's nothing to do outside, some very sad places. Mm-hmm. But there are places you could hike or bike or canoe or kayak, like you're saying, or even, you know, I know some places in the Midwest now they'll do climbing on silos and things, so they'll improvise ways to do outdoorsy kinds of things. So
working on a farm.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
That is.
Yeah.
A lot of outdoor adventures.
Grew up laboring climbing outdoors. Silos and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not for recreation, but for...
Well,
or for recreation.
Basically. I didn't know how to do anything on a farm. Let's be real.
Nice. But, well, that's good. You didn't just, chance to get your arm caught in an auger.
No.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, I think just trying to seek out in your area, just even if there's not something obvious, then there's probably, if you look around, there's probably something you can do outdoorsy.
Mm-hmm. You can always play soccer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think with anything you do, if you're wanting to get involved, you just swallow that pride. Just go out and do it. With anything, the rock climbing walls, the soccer, whatever, you get out there and there's always the people who really know what they're doing. And man, mm-hmm. do they look like it too. They went to the store and they bought all the right stuff. But, you know, my experience is just get out and do it and don't worry how silly you look. You'll have a good time and eventually you'll know what you're doing and you'll look like you belong too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I was thinking of a couple ideas because, like I said, I did, you know, I've lived in Colorado a long time now, but I lived in a small town. I grew up in the Bay Area of California, which isn't exactly considered an outdoor wonderland. And then I lived in Washington, D.C. For the cities, one thing that's very fun to do is like rooftop parties or dining. That's something that, you know, a lot of big cities will have a skyscraper, will have a restaurant on its roof. And that's always fun to go in the evening and watch the sunset and be able to be out in that. A lot of city parks as well. I mean, especially the bigger cities have huge parks. Very fun. Going to an arboretum. Martha, have you ever been to the arboretum outside of Minneapolis?
I haven't.
Okay, well, you need to because it's a good one.
Okay.
It's a very good one.
Write that down.
I'm very unsophisticated here because I don't even know what an arboretum is.
Me either.
Well, where they're known for like the growing of, they cultivate trees and flowers and landscapes and stuff like that. And it's usually a huge project put on either by forestry or, you know, the city. It's like a DNR almost kind of, venture. But they are great. And it's kind of one of those things where people are like, this is the last thing I would ever do. But I've been to some and they're a lot of fun. So just to also, you know, people that do well with there are a lot of public gardens and different things that are always fun to go to. Public libraries always seem to have well-crafted landscapes. I don't know, around them. A lot of times it's kind of fun to go to. So there are things to do in cities, even...
And if you're from a small town, more than likely there's not a ton of lights. So, stargazing is the best.
Yeah. Meteor showers.
Yes.
Very true. Northern lights, if you're up in the north places. Mm-hmm. So, good reason to go to Alaska, Canada.
That's true.
You might catch some of them. So
geocaching. You can do it anywhere. Oh, my. In the country, in the city.
Yeah. Okay.
Great activity to get out. Great for the whole family. My kids love it. We call it treasure hunting.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you can go online and find like maps or find...
There's a website, geocaching.com, that you can find geocaches around the world. And there's, around any big city especially, there's literally thousands.
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds of thousands, I would imagine, around big cities, come to think of it.
Yeah, and if you have a smartphone for just a couple of bucks, you can probably get an app that'll,
yep.
Oh, that'll yeah. show you, that you can use to track down the geocaches.
Stage your own national treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cool discussion, everyone. Very fun, and good ideas, I think, for just giving us a mindset to appreciate the outdoors, whether it's just appreciating sunlight or the breeze in your face or getting all hardcore and going and scaling a mountain or... swimming, you know, some long distance across a lake or a channel or whatever, whatever it is you choose to do. A great opportunity to appreciate who God is and what he's done and, you know, and then look forward to the time when you can go back inside for, you know, the winter or whatever, whatever you want to do. So thanks everyone for joining the discussion.
Thank you.
When I was alone, you took my hand. Foolish wanderer in a foreign land. I was out of hope and out of time. When I was falling down, you picked me up. When I had nothing left, you were enough. I couldn't hide from you.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's culture segment. I am very privileged to have on the phone Max Lucado. Max, welcome.
Thank you. It's my privilege. I appreciate the invitation.
Oh, no, it is our privilege. We are very excited. In fact, I was just throwing out on Facebook this morning to our audience, asking them, what's your favorite Max Lucado book? And everyone's weighing in. Of course, everything from You Are Special to Fearless. You have written a crazy, crazy number of books. I just need to say that.
Some people do quality. I just do quantity.
Okay, well, this is like funny because I was, in fact, I was just telling Martha, our producer, on the way down, I was like, it's like millions, multi-millions, like, you know, close to 80 million or something in print. It's just ridiculous. And you know, over 50 books, I guess you've written at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, and not just books that have been written, obviously, off of sermon content, but you've written children's books and, you know, a number of different things. Your latest book, the one that we're kind of driving to today, is called Max on Life. And you're basically addressing a number of questions that you've come across over the years from any wide range of people that no doubt have stumbled through your congregations and that you've mm-hmm. met on speaking tours. Just by way of introduction, in 2005, you were named Reader's Digest. I guess they called you America's Best Preacher. They gave you that title. And Christianity Today has actually referred to you as America's Pastor, which I think is true. I mean, so many people just resonate with what you have to say and with your sermons and the way that you specifically put things in word pictures that I think are so helpful. In fact, another thing I put on Facebook this morning is my mom, who is 82 years old, and everyone at Boundless knows and loves her. She is what I call a maximaniac. she loves your books. In fact, she told me she's starting to, quote, collect them. So she, I was like, wow, because I'd given her a couple in the past, and now she's out hunting them down, and she keeps reading me excerpts from different ones. And,
oh, that's kind of, where does your mom live?
She is up in northern Minnesota in a town of 122 people.
Is that right?
Yeah. So she
is that where you grew up?
I didn't grow up there. I was born there, and then when I was six, I moved to California, and that's where we grew up. We worked with Filipinos out in the Bay Area. My folks had been missionaries in the Philippines.
Right.
So she's a huge fan. You and Joel Rosenberg and a couple others. You're in a very elite group of people that she reads. So I told her, you know, that I was going to talk to you today, and she just flipped out, you know. So So when you're up in Wolverton, Minnesota.
Next time I'm there, I will. Next time.
Which I'm sure will be on your next book tour. So we'll have to make sure that you have a chance to meet her. So, well, again, just a huge privilege to have you here. And I just want to launch in a little bit of your history. One thing I thought was interesting is you had... obviously born and raised in Texas, but you went to Miami to work. One of your first gigs was as a singles pastor.
That's right, yes.
Leading the singles group. So that is, you are close to the hearts of our audience.
Well, I did. I had committed, I became a follower of Christ when I was in college, and I wanted to do mission work. And so I joined a team of missionaries, and they were moving to Brazil, but they weren't moving to Brazil for about another 5 years. We're all different ages and wanted to give everybody time to finish college or seminary, whatever they were in. So that left me really about 3 years I didn't want to just twiddle my thumbs. And I found a church in Miami, Florida that was looking for a pastor, an associate pastor. And so I applied for the position and I received it. And I was single at the time. And so they allowed me to work with the singles of the church, and I assumed I would go to Brazil single. I didn't have any prospects. I actually met and married my wife in Miami, but that was those years in Miami were really fun years working with the singles group and kind of filtering through some of the issues that first writing that I did, curiously enough, was for that singles group, and I wrote a little magazine article, and here was the catchy title, A Case for Pre-Sexual Marriage. I was so proud of myself for coming up with that phrase.
Wow, okay.
And and I submitted it to a magazine, and it got published, but it was out of our singles ministry.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty wild. Yeah. And that was back in the early 80s, I think.
I think I started in 79 at that church.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I know some of your writings became On the Anvil, which is
was a
huge bestseller. And of course, you've been writing. I even was saying to someone yesterday, I said, yeah, you know, his recent book, you know, the 316 one. And then I realized, oh, I guess there's been like four since that. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So what would you say, because you actually have three grown daughters,
So
you probably know a lot about young adults, not only having raised three of them, but having been in the church for so long and understanding what this generation is struggling with and what their hopes and dreams are. Have you seen any changes over the years in the last 20 to 30 years as far as how that's affecting the young adult generation?
It's a fascinating generation. I have three daughters, all in their mid-20s. The oldest one is married. I have a daughter who just finished college last weekend. Mm-hmm. Graduated from Baylor University. Mm-hmm. And then I have a daughter who works in the publishing world in the marketing department of a publishing company. And then my oldest daughter is married. What two or three things strike me as unique to their world, and many, this would apply, I think, to many of your folks, your listeners and readers. One is just the... amazing amount of information that's coming at us. Mm-hmm. And they are so media savvy, so quickly connected to everything. At the same time, finding one voice that is a reliable voice amidst all of these voices, finding an authoritative voice seems to be more challenging than... I was taught to trust the pastor. You know, I was taught to trust... Mm-hmm. The high school principal. I was taught to trust the priest. I grew up in a world where we had these positions of authority that we trusted, and I think that began to unravel quite a bit in the 70s and the 80s. I'm not a sociologist, but I think Vietnam and the Watergate scandal kind of unraveled all of that. And one of the challenges young people have today, younger people have, is finding that voice of authority that they can really trust. A lot of voices are coming at us, but determining the one that's reliable and trustworthy is another matter.
Yeah, and definitely with this generation, it is much more of a, you see so much of the peer influence and going to one's peers for advice or going online and going into forums. And I think it's a tricky business because you can probably get a lot of advice and insight that isn't biblical or even healthy on a number of fronts.
Yeah, and it's so easy to post information that position yourself as an authority when really all you do is you know how to create a blog page, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas 20 or 30 years ago, you, in order to become a purveyor of information, you had to pass through a series of qualifying events, like getting published.
Sure.
Or finding a company that would hire you to head up their division in this area. Now, if you can create a blog page or you can send out a Twitter, you know, you get to share your opinion. Mm-hmm. And then there's some beauty in that, but there's some issues in that, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you obviously, like we've already talked about, write quite a bit, speak quite a bit, preaching, obviously, your association with Oak Hills in San Antonio. How do you choose what to write about? And how has it changed maybe in the last 10 to 15 years?
What a great question, because I think about that a lot. I really try and seek to present messages that are relevant for our congregation. All of my books come out of my sermons.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, the church where I serve determines what...
I'd like to know what sermon Hermie came
out
of.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think you could... Although Hermie originally was a story I wrote for our children's department. One Easter, but then that became a series of books.
One of our fans said that you look like Hermie.
Yeah.
She said, I want that to be, tell him that's a compliment.
Well, I'll take it as one, although he is a pretty rangy looking guy. You know, I select my sermons out of conversations that I have with church members. And it's curious that we're having this conversation right now because in the next month or so, I need to determine what my next series of lessons is going to be.
Hmm.
And I'm vacillating back and forth between a study of the book of Colossians and a study of the life of Joseph.
Hmm.
And I love the book of Colossians because it elevates Christ, and I love the story of Joseph because it talks about how God interrupts our lives so often. So I'm literally asking people in the church, and really ask them just about everywhere I go, which would you like? Which connects with you? Where are you? What message, series of messages would speak to where you are? And so I'm wrestling with that right now. And it usually comes clear, you know, and so I'm confident it will this time as well.
Sure. Well, I think so much when I talk to people, just in general, but specifically people in my generation, there's a feeling of being stuck and of feeling like, you know, there's a discouragement or there's a, this isn't how I scripted my life to be. And maybe there are things that are tripping up people that are really maybe affecting their freedom in Christ or really how they view God himself. What are some of the things that you've seen resonate among people in your congregation as far as things that really are keeping people stuck nowadays, and how are you hoping to address that?
I liked your phrase, this isn't how I expected life to be, because I think that summarizes maybe and perhaps as much as any sentence could the crisis of faith that people through which people pass.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't, if I were to press people and say, what expectations do you have of God? Most people would say, oh, I don't have any expectations. Hmm. He's running the world. He's sovereign. He can do whatever he wants. But when we go through times of difficulty, the question surfaces, you know, why would God allow this struggle to come into my life? Well, that belies an expectation.
Mm-hmm.
If God is God, then I would have a job by now. I would be married by now. I'd have children by now. I would never have cancer. I would be able to qualify for this mortgage. We have these expectations, often not articulated, but they certainly do define where we live. And I think that's what got me interested in studying Colossians, curiously, was because it elevates Christ to the one who is supreme and in control, and we can trust him to do what is right, not always what we want, but what is right. And I think that's where people find themselves today, and that is dealing with a life that surprises them and trusting that God knows more than we do what we need.
Sure. So for that young adult that says, you know, why isn't God writing my story the way I want him to? Or, you know, when will I see his plan, and how do I live in hope in the meantime? What's your encouragement to them?
Yeah, I would say we will never see all of his plan until the plan is unfolded at the end of history. But we will see enough to cause us to take a step of obedience every day. This all boils down to just a matter of trust, to avoid cynicism like the plague. I don't know anything that contaminates and cancers the heart more than just being cynical, just kind of that bitter sourness that comes. Cynicism, I like to describe it as an educated anger, that sophisticated anger at God. We have to avoid that because that causes us to really step away from God. But if we can just have more of that childlike trust and know that He has proven His love for us in the way He lived and died, and then proven His power in the way that He rose from the dead, and trust that and believe, lean into that, the end result will be a life that's worth living. The reason that we haven't read the script is because if God showed it to us, we couldn't understand it. I don't think our minds have the capacity to understand it all. His ways are unsearchable. So let's trust Him to do what He wants to do and lean into that.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, Max, as you look at the church, Big C, because obviously you're involved there at Oak Hills, but also you speak to many churches and I'm sure have a network of pastors that you're connected with. What is the church in the world today doing right, and what are we doing that is probably keeping us ineffective?
Boy, that's a great, yeah.
You know, I mean, just in 30 seconds, whatever. Yeah. No, just kidding.
We're doing great at in our acceptance and extending hands across denominational walls. There used to be a far greater stereotypical work done among ourselves, and we used to be more cautious and suspicious of one another, who people who didn't attend the same brand of church that we did. I think that's passing. I think the phrase post-denominational is certainly true. I think denominations will always serve their function, and fortunately, they're not serving to divide the church as much. I think that's good. I think right now we're trying to figure out how to move from and really, really bring a clear voice to the questions that the world is asking. The questions that the world is asking are questions about world hunger, questions about social justice, and questions about human need. And here's where I think we still struggle, and that is we have been hesitant to lead the way. I believe that the church should lead the way, not just be a voice, but we need to lead the way. People need to be coming. The government should be coming to us saying, how do we feed the poor? Mm-hmm. Because we have gotten so efficient at it. And we have not. We somehow, along the way, relegated that, that the church is to be about the business of souls and not about the business of stomachs. But we have to be about the business of stomachs. Mm-hmm. So if I could, you know, have one prayer answered for the church, I would say, Lord, turn us into your best team in terms of feeding the poor and the needy in the world. Mm-hmm. That's where we need to be.
Yeah. One of my favorite illustrations that you use is the story of the men on the Emmaus Road. And I can't remember, maybe it's shown up in a couple of books, but you talk about when Jesus approaches them and they're basically discouraged because the plan that they had and that they thought Christ was going to accomplish ultimately, in their view, didn't happen. And so they're walking along, and then we discover that because of what Christ had to do, his plan was much huger and something that they could not have even dreamed up on their own, and ultimately resulted in the salvation of an entire people and really an accomplishment of an eternal plan rather than just that immediate rescue of his people then. Love that one. What for you has been maybe your top two or three most transformational passages in Scripture, and how have they really kind of shifted your view of God or of life or the people around you? Just things that you learned in a fresh new way.
Yeah, the most transformational discovery of my life is the discovery of grace, that we are saved by grace through faith and not by works, lest any man should boast. That's just the greatest news. The greatest news that a person could ever hear. Yep. And it's great for many reasons. Number one, because I do not feel like I have a heart that is good enough to impress God. And number two, because no other religious movement, no other philosophy has dared to posit or position such a radical thought. and that is that God would save us by what someone else did and not by what we do. This unique teaching that theologians call the substitutionary atonement, where Jesus is our substitute and his death on the cross is atonement for our sins, that's just such a refreshing discovery, a wonderful discovery. And as one who, though I was trusted grace when I became a Christian, then I made the mistake of trying to lean and stay saved by my good works for a couple of years. And I almost needed a new conversion after following Christ for a while because I thought, okay, I've got to keep myself saved. Well, no, that's exactly the wrong thing. And this is the whole point of the book of Galatians, is that what saves us initially keeps us eternally. When I found that out, when I could rest, I could just trust and I could rely and know that I never fall out of my salvation and I never fall out of God's grace. I may step out of his will, but I never step out of his love. Mm-hmm. This is a transforming discovery. You know, our ideas create our thoughts and our ideas create our emotions and our ideas create our actions. And so if you have the wrong idea about God, you're going to have the wrong thoughts, emotions, and actions. But you've got to have the right idea about this grace. And so that to me was the single most transforming discovery, Lisa, and that is to discover this thing that I'm saved by grace. Then every other discovery I've made that's been life-changing has been a kind of a subsidiary or a second verse mm-hmm. of that first one. You know, the fact that Christ now lives inside me. I was following Christ for a decade before I took Paul's teaching seriously. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And it dawned on me, you mean he's really living inside me? It's like my heartbeat is his heartbeat. And when I speak, he's speaking through me. I still haven't gotten my mind around that thought. And so, but that's all because of his grace. So I guess if I had to nail it down to one, it'd just be the discovery of grace.
Yeah, that's so true, so true. So you have, we already referenced the fact that you have three grown daughters. What, you know, and obviously I said, you know, you obviously have a love for young adults born not only out of them, but out of your ministry. What's your hope for your daughters as you look at them facing the next 10, 20 years? You know, a couple of them still single, the other one married and, you know, looking ahead at a life that she's now building. What's your hope for them and how do you actively speak into their lives at this stage in their lives?
I think my hope for them is that they would have a more radical faith than I do, a faith that really pushes them to lean on God more than I do, and I'm seeing that. I think they're very bright girls and very gifted girls, and I'm thinking that they have already a more kind of a, I don't know, how do you put this other than radical, just kind of a reckless abandon in trust in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an adventure that awaits people who want to follow Christ. And I don't want my daughters, I want them to be married, Lisa, but I don't want them to slow their life down waiting on marriage. My thinking is, and my encouragement to them is, you go and be about God's mission, and God will give you everything you need to accomplish that mission. And mm-hmm. if that is a spouse, that's where you will find the spouse. In fact, that's what happened to me. You know, I mentioned earlier, I left college, I left seminary single, and I thought, well, I'm going to Brazil to be a missionary, and I guess I'll go single. And it was en route, literally, in Miami, kind of on the way to Brazil, that I met and married my wife. And so I'm glad I didn't just kind of put everything on hold, my ministry on hold and my work on hold, until I found my wife. I think it makes sense to pursue your ministry, pursue mm-hmm. that ministry, whatever that call is that God has on your heart, and know that he's going to give you what you need, he wants you to have to accomplish that. If that includes a spouse, it will come on the path.
Right. And I know we often talk a lot here at Boundless about how, we need to be active in ministry, and especially women and men, we have different roles in that, you know, and a lot of women get frustrated because they feel like, you know, they have a more passive role, whereas men are to be the pursuers. And I think it looks a little different for both. But like you said, you know, to to do life and to do what God's called you to do, and at the same time recognize that, yeah, if you're called to marriage, then what does that look like, and how can you pursue that intentionally, or in the case of women, be open to that intentionally and be preparing for that. I think it's a delicate balance, because we see so often in the church now that it's a very passive, oh, well, if it happens, it happens.
And yeah.
So a lot of young adults kind of get caught in this trap of serving self and getting caught up in their lives without really realizing that God can use marriage and family to shape their world.
Absolutely. And one thing we can do during our single years, and if we're for the rest of our life single, it's great to have done this. And if you're married, it's essential to have done this, and that is we can identify our unique giftedness and our what our contribution is to be to the kingdom. We can examine a variety of different ministries and find the one that causes our heart to beat fastest, where we serve the best, and where we find the greatest fulfillment. Identify that. I think that's the key, especially for somebody in their young adult years. Mm-hmm. Don't settle for doing what you weren't called to do. Years ago, I wrote a book called Cure for the Common Life. I'm really not plugging that book, but that whole idea of finding what the uncommon assignment is in life is really a wonderful thing to do, and the best time to do that is as a young adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a great great springboard for allowing God to work in our lives and, you know, move us in what direction He chooses.
Absolutely.
So that says, I mean, He's obviously not done with you yet. What do you see coming up in the next couple of years for you?
I have I'm 56 years old, so I guess I'm getting old. I was sure looking at gray hair the other day when I got a haircut.
Oh.
I think I see myself entering into the fourth quarter of life. I don't know how long the fourth quarter is going to last, of course, but I say fourth quarter because I know what team I'm on. I pretty well see the playing field, and I know what my assignment is. And so I kind of feel like I'm entering a fourth quarter, and what I'd love to do, Lord willing, is more of what I'm doing, and that is pastor the church and write books. I share the preaching responsibilities now with another person, mm-hmm. so I preach 6 months out of the year, and that frees me up to write and to do a little more travel. And I think that's a good balance. Sometimes I think about slowing down just a bit. I tend to get out of balance in terms of getting overcommitted. I wish I could figure that part of it out better. But, you know, God has been gracious and given me health and energy, and so I don't really see a major change. I think I'm on the same track for the next few years.
And what kind of things are you reading right now?
Well, I have, let me think, what book did I throw in my briefcase? You know what? I've been reading a book by Randy Alcorn. I like Randy Alcorn. His best book, I think, is the book on heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, that really helped me. And he has a book that's pretty recent that Tyndale House published, and it's called The Treasure Principle.
Hmm.
And I picked it up because I'm trying to think through this whole issue of retirement. I know your audience isn't thinking about it. I'm trying to think through, though, as a steward, am I supposed to have money saved up for retirement? And this book called The Treasure Principle talks about the balance between what to give away and what to keep. There's no tidy answer, but he has some great principles.
Oh, that's neat, yeah.
Yeah.
What's something about you that is maybe a little bit crazy? Like something that we wouldn't associate with a pastor who, you know, now claims he's moving into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows on the show that I'm a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
And so I kind of put it out there, but we need to know something about you.
Most people don't know that I did triathlons.
Oh, wow.
Half Ironman triathlons for quite a while.
Well, no wonder you're healthy.
Well, after doing several of those, I developed a heart condition.
Oh.
And I think, and which really surprised all of us, but I think it was genetic is best, just some, because my heart really was healthy. I didn't have a cholesterol issue.
Yeah.
But I loved doing those. The doctor right now won't let me get back into them, but I've done them in Hawaii, in mm-hmm. Florida, and I have a group of guys, and our favorite weekends, we'd, you know, pack up our bikes on a Friday and be in a half Ironman triathlon on a Saturday, and then fly home on Saturday night. Those were fun. And most people don't think of a pastor and an author as a guy who enjoys, you know, the swim and the run and the bike. I never was very fast, but I never fell over either.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I did read about that you you've had to deal with atrial fib.
I have.
That's okay.
And but I'm thankful it's under control now.
Yeah.
And so.
Okay, that is another point of connection with my mother. Okay?
Is that right?
She has got atrial fib. So I don't think she knows that you do. So I'm just saying again, when this Minnesota book tour happens,
okay.
I'm gonna have to.
What was the name of that town again?
Bless her heart. Wolverton.
Wolverton.
It's just across the border from Fargo.
Okay. Is it cold there in January?
Oh, my word. It's like 30 below. Yeah. So I wouldn't recommend a Texan go there anytime other than like June through September.
Even then, I may need to take a jacket.
Even then, bring a parka. But yeah, so she, you know, she will just be, she'll just be amazed when I tell her that. But, you know, like I said, she's 82. And she actually
great.
Read, we had her read at her church over Christmas. They had a little program where anyone could share an inspirational reading or a song or whatever, a poem. And she went up and read an excerpt from one of your books.
Oh, that's great.
That was her thing that she wanted to contribute. So
that's great.
But, well, Max, it has been a privilege talking to you. I got to let you go because you have to get home eventually here. But I just want to remind our folks to check out your stuff. Find out more about Max at maxlucado.com. He is also on Twitter and Facebook. Of course, all of you are connected with our social media outlets. You can find out more about him there. Max Lucado, minister of preaching at Oak Hills Church in San Antonio. Thank you so much for sharing some time with us today.
It's my privilege, and thank you. You do a great job. What a wonderful interview. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, we just love you, and we're so passionate about, you know, really talking to some of those of you, not that you're old, but just those who are a few steps ahead of us and who really have walked with the Lord and have been an inspiration. And like I said, so many of our audience are reading your books and just really gaining encouragement from them. And so you need to maybe tool on out here to Colorado Springs sometime soon. So
I don't have to be asked twice. It's one of my favorite cities. Thank you so much.
Say hi in person. Well, you have a great day, and
okay.
Thanks again, Max.
All the best.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In the middle of the darkest night, in the rubble of the hardest fight, I was running, I was trying to hide.
Everyone, we are opening up this week's inbox and kind of have a little bit of a departure from our normal format. We are going to be talking to Bob Walaszewski. Bob, welcome.
Well, Lisa, it is great once again to be back on the Boundless program.
I know. We usually have you on a culture segment, but we decided to put you as our inbox this week because we tend to get a lot of questions from folks talking about specific types of movies and different entertainment choices and just kind of discernment in media, which you specialize in. And so we figured as we are in really the throes of summer here and lots of our audience are going to movies and planning to go to movies, we figured we better just bring you in for a good roundup of the blockbusters and all the things that people are talking about. I was just at Super 8 last weekend.
Okay.
And just the trailers alone for the previews, I either did not understand what most of them were talking about, or I was like, what in the world? Who would ever want to see this movie? Because you could tell, like, when you see a movie like Super 8, which all my friends were like, oh, it's a throwback to Spielberg from the 80s. And I'm like, really? What's that? you know, you see this kind of stuff and you're like, okay, is this all like technology oriented or is it sci-fi or is it whatever? I'm just like, who's coming up with these plots? Okay. So that was my first thought. The second thought was, as I went and looked for what's really coming out this summer, everything this summer is like a third or fourth installment of movies that have already been made.
Transformers 3, Harry Potter 8?
Like
there are seven books and they split up the seven into two. Yeah.
Well, exactly. And then we already had on the front end, you know, in spring, really, I guess it was, they had Scream 4, Pirates, obviously.
Thor.
Thor.
Rio, Rango.
Yeah.
Cars 2.
Yeah. Cars. There's going to be like another Spy Kids, I think, coming up at the end
the
of the
fourth?
Summer. Yeah.
Four.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I can't say I really followed that franchise. But anyway, so first of all, talk to us just generally about summer movies. How are they different from the rest of the year and why this whole idea of the blockbuster?
Well, even before I do that, I want to come back to our listeners to say that I go back to the reason that we do this, because I want to make sure that we just don't talk about movies. We're talking about the reason. And that is, I believe the creator of the universe cares about what we watch, what we listen to. Obviously, with the Boundless audience, we're not. It's different. We don't have to go see the Rangos, the Rios, and the Cars, and the Zookeepers and say, okay, you know. I mean, we can push it a little bit. But at the same time, even though we push the limits a little bit, we've got to. And I can't stress enough, we still... I have to say, I want to honor Christ with my entertainment choices. And I can't say that enough to this audience, to any audience. We have to keep that in mind as we make those decisions. So getting back to that question.
Well, and I will add, too, a caveat preview for next week's show. We're going to be basically issuing a smackdown to people about life choices and really what defines how you live your life. How do people see that you are a Christ follower beyond what you say? And entertainment is one of those big determiners.
Well, it is. I mean, and yet I don't want to just have a bunch of rules and regulations and check boxes where we check it off and say, okay, I stayed away from, you know, Hangover 2, Bridesmaids, and Horrible Bosses, and I saw everything else, therefore, you know, I got some extra brownie points. It's not about that. For me, it's the fact that, you know, I don't love the scripture, but it is the scripture that says, deny thyself, take up your cross and follow him. It's one of those. And I think as believers, sometimes we have to say no to certain things. Entertainment is one of those worlds where we have to say, it's not just drugs and alcohol and sex outside of marriage. Sometimes it's just saying, I'm not going to go to that, even if all my friends. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think I've established that. But getting back to the whole thing about summer, you're absolutely right. Hollywood has looked at what makes money and they found out that familiarity and to come back and comic books, superheroes are huge, and so we're getting a lot of that. And animation, obviously Disney was the forerunner, but then DreamWorks got into the mix, and now we've got several other studios, and they're getting more and more into that because in 3D is big now. That may be a passing fad. Maybe a year or two, 4 years from now, we'll hardly see anything in 3D. But right now, everything's in 3D. Last night I saw Harry Potter 8 in 3D, you know, and by the way, to me, it doesn't add all that much. But let me just say a couple things. We have had at least 8 movies, if you take out The Bridesmaids and The Hangover 2, the hard R's, that have made over $100 million so far this summer. To me, that puts it in the blockbuster territory. For instance, Transformers, Dark of the Moon, $261 million. It's only been out 2 weeks. Cars 2, $148 million. Super 8 that you've already mentioned, $118 million. Green Lantern, $109 million. Bridesmaids, which I said we'd take it out, but it's made $158 million. X-Men, The First Class, $142 million. Pirates of the Caribbean, $236 million. Kung Fu Panda, $159 million. So we have had a lot already of blockbusters, and we haven't even gotten to Captain America or Harry Potter 8, which will be huge.
Which are still to come, and a few others still coming down the pike this summer as well. So is it just that more people are going to movies in the summer, or is it that people really anticipate these movies and make them kind of events?
Well, it's both. It's both. And it's also the fact that with 3D that we've already mentioned, the price of tickets are more expensive because there's that $2 to $3 surcharge. So when you actually do the math, it's less people going to the theaters than, say, in the 50s and the 60s. We're not at an all-time, you know, people are not watching their movies more in theaters today than ever before. No, that those decades are past. Mm-hmm. But people are watching more because they can watch them on DVD and on demand and in hotel rooms and on their cell phones. So there's a lot of that that adds to the mix. But just in the theater only, it's actually, it's huge because of expensive tickets and the 3D phenomenon.
Okay. So I think a lot of people, especially young adults, look at maybe the summer slate and they think, okay, like you said, you know, we're talking comic books, we're talking just random sci-fi action. So I think that a lot of people apply this broad brush to certainly all of that's got to be okay. But let's talk about some of the good, the bad, and the ugly when we're talking about what we should or shouldn't be going to see this summer, regardless of whether, because you talk a lot to parents of young children where you're parsing out violence and sexual content and stuff. A lot of young adults, 20s and 30s, will say, well, you know, whatever, I've seen it all. So, but we're saying, as you've talked about in the past, when Jesus is loading up the Jesus minivan, Bob, we need to know who he's going to take to what, okay? So you need to talk to, and I'm very surprised, and I think apart from this, we could have a separate discussion about this. You know, we glossed over, you know, Hangover 2 and Bridesmaids and stuff. Hangover 2, I believe, now is the highest grossing comedy opening weekend of all time.
Yeah, it's made $250,804,000 in its 7 weeks that it's been out. So.
Okay, some Christians are going to see that. They got to be
Absolutely.
Be putting into that money. Okay, if any of you out there saw Hangover 2, I'm rebuking you right now. I want you to write to me and confess right now. Lisa Anderson, confess it. Confess it. No one in Boundless should be going to see that. Okay, I digress. Go ahead.
Well, it goes, if you really want to go back to the minivan, to me, if Jesus were walking the face of the planet today and Peter says, hey, let's go see Hangover 2, let's go see Bridesmaids, let's see Horrible Bosses, yeah. And you ask that question, put it in that perspective, would Jesus say, oh, absolutely, come on, where's Thomas? Thomas, come on, yeah. You know, hey, Andrew, you know, let's Bartholomew, come on, let's all get, we're $250 million, we're not missing this one. Yeah. You know, obviously the answer is he would not, and he would probably say, get thee behind me, Satan, to Peter, if Peter asked. So, if we would ask the same questions, the same answers would be given. So your rebuke, even though a little bit tongue firmly planted in cheek, you meant it. And I would say that's true. But the thing is, we then have to filter it down even to the PG-13s and sometimes mm-hmm. the PGs, because mm-hmm. there are just movies out there that are just junk and they're just awful. And mm-hmm. Jesus wouldn't load the minivan up with his disciples. And therefore, we shouldn't. But by the way, there are several good movies out
yeah,
this
give us
summer.
The bright lights.
You know, I'm going to start with Thor. It's still playing in the Dollar Theater here in Colorado Springs area, so we've got listeners that are still must be playing in their Dollar Theaters around. It wasn't bad, and it was one of those superhero movies, if you will, that had some good messages. Fatherhood was in there. The Tree of Life, Brad Pitt and Sean Penn. It moved at the pace of grass growing at many times in the movie, but at the same time, it was an interesting take on the Book of Job. And for some, especially those listening to us that are real film buffs that like to go see the artsy stuff, Tree of Life was artsy to the nth degree, and with the Book of Job emphasis, it certainly had it. And then if you go into the things like Kung Fu Panda and Cars 2, you know, they were pretty
also
decent.
Also very
as well.
Artsy.
Monte Carlo, if any of our listeners are looking for, you know, something to do with a girlfriend or maybe with their mom, it wasn't bad. Larry Crown, an interesting date movie, not a perfect movie, but Julia Roberts and Tom Hanks in this one, the love story was sweet. I like the fact that he didn't take advantage of her in a certain scene where she was a little tipsy and definitely looking for a one-night stand. And he absolutely said no. And I want to just stand up in the theater and go, yes, Tom, that was the right response in this scene. You know, by the way, a film that he wrote and I believe also directed. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, and I think there are, like you said, you know, those are good suggestions because a lot of the ones, you know, I mean, I'm like one of these people that's like, pirates, seriously? What are they going to do in a fourth installment of Pirates that has not already happened? So I haven't seen it yet, you know, haven't seen it. Now, coming out this weekend, I was just pulling the movies coming out July 22nd.
Captain America.
Captain America seems to be the big one. The rest of these I have not even heard any promotion for. And I'm like, seriously, what what is prompting people to create these films and then go to them? Friends with Benefits. Did we not see that in the whole, what was up with Ashton Kutcher and what's
No Strings Attached.
Yeah, No Strings Attached. We just, this movie just came out. Can people just not get enough of promiscuity? And I get.
Apparently not.
Apparently not. That is another one we are not going to let any boundless people go to. Then we have A Little Help with Jenna Fischer. A recently widowed single mom reconnects with an old flame who happens to be her sister's husband. Oh, wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's that. Another Earth, I don't even understand what that's about. Bellflower, eccentric LA-based friends spend their time preparing for the apocalypse. Like I said, Friends with Benefits. Sarah's Key is looks like a... Kristen Scott Thomas, and then The Myth of the American Sleepover. Storyline follows four teens on the last night of summer. So this weekend, it's looking like Captain America. Tell us, give us a roundup of that one, Bob.
You know, we haven't seen a screening of that one. And what's more, I can't even find out what it's rated, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
We have gone to IMDb. We have gone to, as we're taping right now, even this morning, we asked for a rating. Now, I think it's going to come in at the PG-13, mm-hmm. But MPAA apparently hasn't either seen it or maybe they're doing some last minute touches. Hmm. So, but I will say in general, these comic book movies, you know, Captain America, tend to do very well in the culture because of the familiarity of a whole bunch of fan bases already out there for folks that have read them as children or teens or tweens, mm-hmm. and they like the character. It's nostalgia, it brings back something. And there's also, because this one is America, and the emphasis on America, there's the whole sense of patriotism, mm-hmm. that could play into the success of this film. Now, if it does a little weak, it's because they're reaching deeper into the bag to find superheroes and comic book superheroes that many people didn't read when mm-hmm. they were kids. And so it's like who read Captain America? You know, there are some, but some people say, I've passed that one up. This right. is not Batman, Superman, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, and still a general understanding of good versus evil, you know, in most of these. There's still, that's laid out there in contrast to something like, as you alluded to, A Horrible Bosses, where apparently now, for the sake of comedy, it's okay, you know, if your boss is terrible, to kill them and, you know, go and make it into a big farce.
Well, Jennifer Aniston, speaking of that particular movie, we caught this quote from her. I think this says all we need to know about Horrible Bosses. She says, "I've never played a character so inexcusably raunchy, and there was no way I could resist it," meaning being in this film. "The dialogue and the situations are so outrageous and fun," end of quote. I forget the fun part, but she's absolutely right. Inexcusably raunchy and outrageous. And do we need any more? I mean, who needs to see Jennifer Aniston in inexcusably raunchy?
Yeah. It's too bad. So, well, Bob, it's always great to have you. Thanks so much for being part of this roundup. I think I'm going to add that one to the list, too. So anyone who anticipates seeing Horrible Bosses, write to editor@boundless.org and confess it. And we'll start.
Or write to Jennifer Aniston.
And
don't have to confess it. Just maybe give it a thought or
and
two.
And issue smackdowns. If your friends are saying that they're going to go see this, just call them out. I mean, this is ridiculous. Someone needs to start standing up for this kind of stuff. This is ridiculous. So I'm just saying.
I will.
Okay. Bob and I are going to do it. We need to get the Jesus minivan. That's what we need. We're going to go cross country, Bob. You and I, we're going to have a bullhorn and start calling out people that are standing in line for these movies. So, well, always a pleasure to have you on. A lot
thanks,
of fun.
Lisa.
Bob, thanks so much. And of course, as we head into fall, that's where we really start pulling a lot of the artsy ones and the Oscar contenders. So we'll have to have you back for that.
Sounds good.
To decipher for us. So thanks again.
You bet.
Well, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us, editor@boundless.org, not only to confess your movie choices, but to ask any questions you have for future inbox segments or to give us feedback on the show or just tell us what you're up to. Hopefully, this show was a fun one for you as we rounded up this summer's movies, as we talked about living life in the outdoors in the summer, or maybe it's your winter, so maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. And then, of course, hearing from Max Lucado, which was just a great deal of fun. Love him and thank him for speaking into our culture as he does as a pastor, and really a lot to us young adults, as we saw throughout the questions that he answered. So that is it for this week's show. Make sure you're listening. Make sure you're telling your friends. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.